the future we were promised.
Hi, Jinx and Sue Podcast, episode 76. This is going to be another different episode. This is part two of the webcomics discussion panel recorded at Dragon's Lair Fantasy and Games in Austin, Texas, December 12th, 2010. This panel features myself, Joel Watson of Hi, Jinx and Sue. It features my friends Danielle Corsetto of Girls with Slingshots, girlswithslingshots.com, David Willis of Short Pact, and Dumbing of Age, shortpact.com and dummingofage.com, and Randall Milholland of Something Positive, somethingpositive.net. Jeff Jacks was on the previous part one of this discussion panel, but was not available for the second day. So check this out. The original podcast, the original panel was about 2 hours. This has been edited for time to about an hour and a half, so it's some good stories and some good fun. If you are in the Austin area, please check out Dragon's Lair Comics and Fantasy. They are a fantastic comic shop, and they do put on the Webcomics Rampage event every year. I've been twice, and they are a stand-up operation if ever there was one. They really take care of independent creators. We had a blast, and I hope to do it again next year. So please enjoy part two of the Dragon's Lair Webcomics Rampage 2010 Webcomics panel.
My name is Randy Milholland. I draw Something Positive and occasionally Super Stupid and Rhymes with Witch.
My name is Joel Watson. I do a comic called Hi, Jinx and Sue and a podcast called Hi, Jinx and Sue.
Creative. I'm Danielle Corsetto. I do Girls with Slingshots and nothing else.
But you should actually do Girls with Slingshots.
Depends on what they're offering. Girls with guns now.
I'm David Willis. I did Roomies, It's Walkie, Joyce and Walkie, Short Pack, and Dummy of Age.
And as of last night, Short Pants.
Anybody else?
That's really it.
All right. Dragon's Lair, and I'll be trying to run the railroad, trying very hard to run the railroad. And my compatriot, Odin Amador, who's our podcast host, will be joining me shortly.
There's no one back there. I was going to say, there's absolutely no one in that corner.
Hey, not talking about my imaginary friend.
That is a Dasani water machine. I don't care what you've named it.
I don't believe there's a guy named Odin. Whatever.
And
yes, how do we summon this Odin? What sort of sacrifice do we have to make?
First we must pluck an eye.
And then pour me a drink.
Here, a crack of lightning. It must be Odin.
Odin, do you want to start off?
Yeah.
It's a shitload list.
These aren't mine. I don't have this kind of forethought.
Yeah, the list is my fault.
So, do you think of webcomic creators and readers as being part of a community, or do you see things in the more traditional light of a business and consumers? Is there somewhere in between?
There's a somewhere between.
Is it a little early to ask this?
throw us a softball first.
I personally see that it's a mix. I mean, there is a business model. I mean, it has to be a business. We have to be making a living at this, otherwise there's no point in doing it. I mean, or for a business model. I mean, you can't do it for a living, you have to have another job. But there needs to be a bit of community. That's one of the nice things, is that we can interact with our readers. You know, we don't have a publisher or a syndicate standing between us and you, which is cool, and sometimes can be horrible, depending on who it is we're dealing with. But it's nice that there is a community feeling, but there's a certain amount of, we have to have business sense. The thing I hate the most is anyone's like, you know, offers you some deal that is blatantly horrible, like, pay $2,000 to come to my con and promote it. No. Don't you feel like you owe it to the fans? No.
I agree that it's actually right in between, because it's, I mean, yes, I have a product, and yes, I'm pushing it, and yes, I hope people, you know, quote unquote, buy it with their eyeballs and their page views or whatever. But there's no barrier there's a lot less of a barrier between the creator and the people that enjoy the work. Whereas, like, you know, you go see a movie and I don't know, freaking Tom Cruise or somebody's in it, and you can't then tell them good job, and nor would he care, you know. And I look at it kind of like stand up, where it's like you tell a joke and you want the laughs. And the way with like Twitter and Facebook and all that, I put out a joke or I put out a comic or whatever it is, and the reaction is almost instant. So that's kind of the payoff, other than the dollars, is that sort of like good job, you know, like at least I look for that, and that only works when you have a little bit of a community built up around it.
It works well that I feel like when I'm thinking about the business end, like what am I going to sell, what am I going to create, what am I going to make next, or how am I going to sell it, how much am I going to sell it for? I'm constantly thinking, if I was, you know, one of my readers, what would I want, and will these people enjoy this? Will the price be okay? Will it be something that they can actually afford? Will it be something they'll enjoy for a long time, kind of thing? It's something they'll enjoy. And then when I actually have to think about it as a business thing, I regret it and I feel guilty about it. So I just try not to think about that part and hope that the money will continue to feed me.
But eating money is not the best way.
It's much more direct.
I know you have a weird diet, but that's weird.
My answer is yes.
Good answer.
Give me your delicious monies.
Well, in the whole community vein, how has reader feedback influenced your storytelling, if at all?
Constantly. That doesn't mean you guys should send your opinions, though.
Yeah. Since I don't do a story, the feedback that I get is typically like, we liked comics about this, or we liked when you did that one character that you don't normally do. And it doesn't mean I'm going to overload it by coming back with that same thing over and over, but you keep that in mind. I mean, it's kind of like being on stage. If you get a good reaction, the natural instinct is to do more of that. So it's sort of an instant gauge for, am I doing something people enjoy? I think what a lot of, when you see a comic that's been doing like regular updates for like 10 years and still has 50 readers, and they're probably half of them are related to the guy, I think that's the guy that doesn't listen to the audience. He's got his, no, this is my vision, and you don't understand because you're stupid, and I will beat you with my vision, and then like,
that's
and
me.
Yeah. I was talking about you, yes, I'm sorry.
It's working out pretty well for me.
Caught on, buddy.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I will listen to readers to a point. Usually, like, the certain characters haven't shown up in a while. In fact, I want to do every year, I start the year off with an old familiar face storyline where I bring back characters that haven't been seen much. And I will let readers request. I don't do a voting system. Like, hey, just email me, who would you like to see? And if I, you know, see one, oh, that's a good idea, I'll grab a person. Or if I have a, you know, hey, I have kind of a blank in the storyline. People ask about this character a lot, I'll bring them back. That's about as far as I take it. When it comes to the actual influencing storylines, I do kind of have my mindset. I will gauge it, like, you know, sometimes I can tell if I'm doing a good job of the storyline or not by how the readers are reacting, and, you know, maybe I'm not telling things right, or maybe I'm not making things clear, and that's important. But as opposed, you know, to shaping the storyline, like, oh, I want to see this, if that was going to happen, Jim and PG would have been dating in year two because I had so many readers convinced he just needs to understand that's who's meant for him. He's gay. What the hell? And I think that if you're going to let it actually influence the outcome of your storylines, your comic will stop being a comic and become fan service, and the people who say they want this stuff will lose total interest.
It's true.
In it.
It's so true.
Yeah, if you look at the opposite end of it, you've got like... Jonathan Rosenberg's new comic, Scenes from a Multiverse, is 100% decided by his readers, where he presents you with five areas of a multiverse for the comic to take place in throughout the week, and then on Friday you vote, and that determines where the comic goes next. It's almost like Choose Your Own Adventure webcomics.
Yeah. They're a little different, though, because they don't get to decide the outcome.
No.
I mean, was focused
on. There's also not a story. It's also a gag strip.
Yeah.
But he does lose sometimes, where, like, he wants to keep doing this story. They didn't pick it. I think they fight him, like, on purpose. They wait and see what he likes. And then vote for the other thing or something.
Because they want to see him struggle with the thing he doesn't want it to do.
Yeah.
because some people are assholes.
See, that's why you say, I like this one.
That's going to happen. He's probably been doing that for a while now. But that's a very interesting model, and it works.
He's the only person doing it. I think it's really creative.
I've always wanted to do that.
But I don't. So cool. I'll be honest, because, again, you always have people, like, they want this weird fan service thing. It's
sometimes, though, man, my readers are so much funnier than I am. They send me ideas, and I'm like, I can't use that. You came up with it. That's way better than
I won't even. If you send me an email, a storyline idea, I have an idea for a story, I hit it reply. Tell you I did not read the rest of your email. I apologize. I don't take reader submissions, and I delete the email.
You don't take spoilers.
And there's just a picture of you flipping them all. Also,
stroking my man pelt. What you gonna do, bitch? Well, I don't know if you guys. I've had in the early years of my comic, I've had people who would get upset because they felt the comic should go a specific way, and they'd start selling scripts of what I should be doing. I got a 20-page treatment once. I'm not kidding. It was 20 fucking pages. And I remember very well, November 2003.
That would be awesome.
His script treatment involved Branwyn cheating on Davin and Mike being there, basically making Mike the focus of the comic. And I replied, I don't use reader scripts, and it's very blatant to me that you identify with Mike and all his negative qualities, and you want to see me change them publicly so you feel like it's not a reflection on you anymore.
Also, kill yourself.
It kind of went over real awesome, as you can imagine. Because everyone wants to be told, I think you're obviously a dick. And you don't want me to call you out. Like, it's not about you, but hey, change yourself. What?
I do not get emails like this.
Well, when you have more than 10 readers.
Nah. Yeah, the best I can tell from your stories, this is nearly a unique situation to you. Where
I get a lot of really nice stuff too, but no one gives a shit about that.
You should post the nicest email you get once a week, or once a year, however often you get
it. Your comic didn't make me vomit.
Yeah. This time.
Way to go, douchebag.
If I got like a treatment, like a script like that, I'd put it up on the website. Hey, man, sweet fanfic.
Yeah. I have that problem where it's like, you know, like 1 week your aunt will say, I sure do like cow sculptures, and then she gets cow sculptures for the rest of her life. I'll do something where I'm like, this character says, like, bacon, and then like every email I get for 5 years is like,
bacon.
Here's a link about bacon, here's lube made out of bacon, here's vodka made out of bacon, here's bacon made out of bacon, here's a pig you can marry, and I'm like, one thing. It's like one damn thing. Never reference anything ever.
You think you have it, man. I still have people emailing to me, oh my god, did you know there's a live action Transformers movie? Yeah.
There's like people from Serbia. Dear Willis, did you know Transformers live screen action fun time? It's big robot.
You like Transformers?
I can be.
Got the next question ready.
How do you guys go about gaining your readership? Is it entirely viral, or is it something that you gain through advertising? Or
I would say mostly viral, but I mean it helps to like spread your name around, like Carter Marvel, that sort of thing.
And I've seen a lot of people rise faster than I have readership wise because they are more active and they don't just kind of wait for word of mouth. But the weird thing is, I still believe that the word of mouth reader is the long-term reader.
Yeah.
I think when the friend says, I love this and you're going to love it too because I know you and I know what you like, that's going to last for a long time. And a link from, you know, a blog, Engadget or Gizmodo or Boing Boing or something, you might get 50,000 people looking at your comic in 5 seconds, but maybe like six of them stick around. So
a good way to keep... word of mouth has been the best friend I've had. I've done ads. For me, they just don't do very well, but I've also, like, my second week of my comic, I got linked by Penny Arcade, and so I went from 200 readers to 20 or 30,000 and those are regular readers, and that does not happen normally. I got freak lucky.
No, if that was a service they sold, I think we would all buy it.
Well, yes, but and it helps. But the best recommendation I have to guarantee you'll get word of mouth is you have to win some reader trust. And James Grant, who draws a comic called Two Lumps, he's doing a comic called Phlegm. When I first started doing my comic, he gave me the best advice ever. He's like, if you want readers to start promoting you, you have to win their trust, and by doing that, don't miss an update for your first 3 months.
Oh, good call.
And the reason why is a lot of webcomics vanish very fast. People get tired of it. I actually only missed 3 updates my entire first year. And 2 of those times, I had a temperature over 102. Oh. So
the comics are mad scrawling.
Actually, there is one comic I did drunk, and I don't remember doing it. So the next day, I woke up, I didn't do a comic last night! What do you mean, overwrite file? There's a comic up. It's one of the best ones I did the first year. It's the one where, Davin's girlfriend gives his cat espresso and he's freaking out. I don't remember doing that.
Awesome.
I've kind of an old-fashioned way of getting readers. I don't know, of trying to get readers.
Clubbing them in the face and dragging them
out.
Yeah,
it works, though. So I have business cards that, it's kind of weird. I don't see a whole lot of web cartoonists doing this, but I've got the stacks and stacks of business cards, and I'll leave them in women's restrooms. I'm thinking about poop, most likely.
Wait, you just said I don't see why cartoonists do that. You're like one of 4 girl cartoonists. So.
Well, no, I mean, you can put them up elsewhere, though.
Men would just pee on them.
You can evolve from the bathroom.
I can't remember what con it was.
So you put them in front of people?
Oh,
but
yeah.
I think it was San Diego Comic Con that I went into a men's bathroom, on the way out on the final day, and there were Chinese restaurant business cards all over the urinal, and I'm like, there's no way I'm going to the Chinese restaurant that has pee cards. That thinks that's a good idea? No way. That says a lot about your restaurant.
Danielle Crosetto is doing your advertising.
Yeah.
Now we get to throw you sort of the softball now that we've warmed you up a little bit.
All right.
Puppies, your opinion. Cuddly or super cuddly?
What do you think is the most awesome moment you've had as a webcomic artist?
Mm. Like non-blender related?
Non-blender related. For those of you who don't know, the post office exchanged some of David's books for the bottom half of the Cuisinart Art Blender.
Awesome. I will take your tips and your pity.
And put them in the blender. Pity tips.
Yeah.
Or titty pips. Whatever. I think I can't say one moment in particular, but I can say that some of the doors it's opened for meeting people and having experiences that just aren't normally possible in a regular, day-to-day job. I'm friends with Will Wheaton now, which is really, really weird for a kid that grew up on Star Trek. And no matter what happens, he drove that damn spaceship, and I can't separate those two things. Which is really, really bizarre. Finding out that people that make TV shows that you watch read your comic, that. Those are the kind of things that having people approach you first that you were already fans of, and being like, "I love your comic," and you're like, ah. "What? No." I'll say one thing that's kind of stood out was I made that shirt with Edward James Olmos on it, and then just 2 weeks after putting it out there, got a call from Olmos Productions, and I thought it was the call to shut me down, but it was like I had a voicemail that was like, "This is so-and-so from Olmos Productions, we need to talk." And I crawled back in bed. I slept for an entire day before calling him back. And I was like, "What?" And they're like, "We love the shirt. We want to work with you." And I'm like, "Woo!"
He made strange expression.
Yeah. After I said that, he hung up. I don't know.
Imagine Joel running around his house, just occasionally go, "Woo!"
I just cry like a baby all the time.
"Daddy, you're weird." Yeah. Your child is pitying you.
Stop making fun of me!
I just imagine your kid now taking your juice box and pushing it down.
How
that is a pussy.
I can
take it.
That happens a lot, though, I think, for everybody. Like, your fandoms
crying.
And your people. And crying. And sadness. But being in this business is weird, where you find there's a lot of... The internet's sort of the great equalizer, where you realize that everybody's just people, and that the people that you really admire also admire other people. Like, I remember at San Diego last year, Jeff was sitting right next to me, and one of his favorite sci-fi authors, like, walked up and was like, I really love your comic, and he kind of did the cry face, too. And, he was talking about that, like, last night. I mean, it made an impact, you know, and it seems to happen to everybody, like, where you get those weird opportunities, like, I guess because we put something out there and regular people can be fans of it and also be like TV producers and stuff and authors and, you know, artists.
I got to mention, in 2006, DC started doing a new Blue Beetle series, and I liked it. I thought it was really good, and I knew a lot of people weren't giving a chance. And said, Jack Cord, meh! But it was actually a decent series, and it was actually kind of a love letter to that character, so I mentioned it on my site, and I got an email from the writer, John Rogers. Like, oh, wow, you enjoy my comic? I've been reading your comic for years. I was like, yup. And I, you know, he's helped me out a couple times on some questions, and, you know, it's been kind of cool. And, you know, I mentioned this yesterday, Neil Gaiman mentioned me in his 2004 Harvey Awards speech, and I got to, like, I remember the first event I ever went to was 2003, and two other guests there were Steve Jackson and Phil Folio. And, you know, I grew up on Phil Folio's art and playing Steve Jackson's games. And it was something kind of surreal to me, having drinks with Steve one night and him telling, this is what I like about your comic, going on about how much he likes the character Fred. I'm like, I play all your games! and he's actually helped me out many times since then, business-wise, you know, just even advice on contracts and what I should do with certain situations. And it's kind of surrealness, and also just meeting people. Like, the first time I ever went to an event, and it was like it wasn't the first one, I did a talk at MIT in 2004. It was me, Stephen Notley of Bob the Angry Flower, and Weeble and Bob of Weeble and Scoo. Weeble Scoo and Weeble Bob, whatever. British guys, they do flash animations, they make badgers and mushrooms and stuff. And just, you know, everyone, just seeing all these people who knew all of us, it was kind of surreal.
So when I put pre-orders out for my first short packed book,
Optimus Prime emailed you and was like, dear paper.
Pretty damn close.
Oh. I'm getting a restraining order.
So, like, in one of the pre-orders was this name called Bob Forward. And Bob Ford was one of the co-creators of Beast Wars, my, like, favorite Transformer series ever.
And yours alone.
I'm thinking, okay, this is maybe a different Bob Ford. Like, no, it's from Los Angeles, and from a city I knew he was from, according to, like, his website. I'm like, oh my god! And I'm like, who put him up to this? Who told him to buy this to make me happy? But no, he just likes my comic.
And then what did he do? Wrote the forward to your book or something?
Yeah, wrote the forward to my third book.
Only because his last name is Ford, though. That's the only thing.
That was a nice bonus. Like, who's a famous guy that I know? And, like, this guy, and that's it.
See, a very similar thing happened to me when I put out the Groverfield shirt. It was a parody of the movie Cloverfield. And one night, it was like 3 in the morning. Oh, yeah, there it is. I got an order from a Jeffrey Abrams in California, and it was like 3 in the morning. And I was actually in Austin when that happened. And I was like, nah, you know, whatever. And then I was like, well, he's in Pacific Palisades. What's that? So I Google Pacific Palisades, and it's a place where there's only $20 million mansions. And I'm like, that's narrowing it down. Okay. So I look up J.J. Abrams, and his real name is Jeffrey, and I'm like, that's really getting close. So then I Google the shipping address, and it links me to the Obama campaign donation website, and there's a woman's name, and I Google the woman's name, and it's his wife. And so I was like, again, woke up my wife, and I'm like, you know what? This thing happened. And I go back to sleep on this one. I emailed him back, and I was like, I hope this isn't out of line. It took me probably 2.5 hours to compose this one-line email. I was like, I hope this is out of line, but I really like your work. Star Trek was my favorite film last year, and I'll send you as many of these as you want. He's like, oh, my kids would probably like some. And, yes, I can do that and be normal and not make a mistake. Okay, bye. Send. And I've had that email address forever, and it's like I've got a kryptonite ring, and I know I can't use it. You know, like, it's like I know I have no right to email him ever again. But I have the email address, and it's like in a lead box in my Batman safe. If J.J. Abrams ever gets too powerful, I have to use it.
Email just
Star Trek
first.
What about you?
I don't have any. I'm trying to think.
You've had creators tell you
like
your work.
Awesome, awesome creators. I didn't realize. I don't know anything about mainstream creators really. And my first SPX, actually, when I launched Girls with Slingshots in 2004, it was that weekend. This guy comes by, and he's just checking out some artwork, and I've got some figure drawings in there, and he's like, "This is really nice work." And I'm like, "Thanks. You should read my webcomic." And I'm just all like, trying to sell it, like, I think that's what I'm supposed to do. I have no idea. I give him a piece of paper. He's like, no, it's cool, but I really like your work. I'm like, just take a card. Why are you taking it? Okay. He left, and the guy next to me was like, do you have any idea who that was? And I'm like, this guy?
That was the president.
I'm kind of pop culture retarded, yeah. But it was Mike Mignola. And so last year, and I love his work. I mean, now that I know, I'm like, oh, I think I know his work. I don't know. Oh. And now I check it out, and he's like one of the only mainstream artists that I really, really admire. So last year, this past year at C2E2 in Chicago, this 16-year-old girl comes up, and she's one of the first people in line for me, and she's like, can I get a drawing of Hazel? She's my favorite character. I'm like, yeah, sure. My default drawing of Hazel is Hazel with, like, a bottle of booze going, boo! And I'm drawing it, and I'm like, you really young. And while I'm drawing it, I'm like, would it be okay? Would your parents be okay with me? Like, she drinks, so I mean, is it okay that I put alcohol? And then I see her tag, and her last name is Mignola. It's Mignola's daughter. She's a huge fan of my comic, as well as Jeff's. I'm just like, I think your parents are gonna be okay with this.
She brings it home and just destroys it. No alcohol in my house.
But Hazel has a demon hand and horns.
Should have.
I love that you have a story like that, and I have one too, but mine's like, I mean, it's completely horrible. Like, I blow the person off.
Oh, unlikely. Oh.
was
your mom?
What was that woman from Lost?
Oh, yeah.
I basically insulted.
We were at a science fiction convention in Dallas, and one of the guests was the lady that played Rousseau on Lost, the French lady from the first couple of seasons. And she had taken a break and was looking at all the artist tables. And I'm like, oh, cool. Like, I'm not super fanboy over her, but it still was neat that at the time Lost was still a really good show, and I thought it was very cool that she was coming over. And before I could like say hi or I really liked the show, Randy goes,
"Luck and Randy."
Yeah, Randy goes, "Here, have a Freeman comic," and Randy's flyer comic, it has an abortion joke on it, so it's sort of a litmus test. If you like this, you'll probably not be offended by the rest of it. So she's like, "Oh, thank you very much. And just walks away. And Randy's like, bitch. Who was? I'm like, do you know? He's like, who was that? I'm like, yeah.
I ruin fan experiences for everyone. You're welcome. Yeah.
Avoid you fandings forever now.
Yeah.
Is there another question or anything we should do?
Yeah. Next question.
Yeah, it's sort of a follow-up.
All in your court.
It's another softball, I guess.
How many TV stars have you offended?
We only had a couple hours for this.
What was the most, whatever, what was the hardest moment you had as a webcomic creator?
For me, going self-employed was scary as shit. Because that means, I'm going to become unemployable soon. I'm not going to have any company want to hire me back if this fails. Because you don't have health insurance. You don't have any safety net. If you screw up, you have no one to blame but yourself. And that is a terrifying, terrifying thing. It's also rewarding because you don't have any meetings. I don't have any boss taking credit for my success. Which is a real exciting thing because I've had three different jobs where I've had superiors doing their best to, I did that. Crap.
They're still taking credit for your comics.
Actually, when I first became self-employed, one of my former employers found out that I had a decent readership and actually suggested I owed it to them to give them free advertising. This is the guy who had me laid off because I wouldn't take credit for his fuck-up that almost cost the company $10 million. So I got laid off 2 days later. I'm like, yeah, I owe you about nothing. And he also, like, after he laid me off, 2 days after that, he's like, hey, could you come in and do some work for us? Like, you, for $50 an hour? He's like, well, no, come on, just do us a favor. I'm not a goddamn pixie who makes shoes for sad shoemakers at night.
Cobblers. They're called cobblers, right? Have some respect.
Children in China.
They're called cobblers.
It's just, that was terrifying. Is you're jumping into something that I never went to business school. I didn't know I was doing. And
mine was the same. I'll say, just to echo that quickly. Mine, I went from a very high paying sales job that I hated to this job, which, you know, there is no paycheck after 2 weeks. You don't know when the pay is coming. You don't know when anything's coming. You don't have health insurance. You don't know what's happening next month or next year or whatever. And eventually you realize that the rewards of not having a boss and not having a bunch of jerks around you all the time and having to pretend that you like people and all that stuff. And it does make you unemployable. Sort of once you... Even if you're broke like most cartoonists are, you... once you get a taste of the lifestyle of not having to put up with anything you don't decide to put up with, it's kind of almost impossible to imagine going back. Mm. But one of the hardest things for me just doing this job has been dealing with any kind of rejection, be it from fans, be it from peers. It takes a lot to get over that when you put so much of yourself into your work. Like, I used to be in sales. If I sold a dentist a website, which is what I did, I didn't really care how it turned out. I didn't care about any part of it. But if I make a comic, there's a lot of me in it. And reading an offhand comment that, like, well, that was crap, you know, it actually makes me feel bad for, like, a day. And you have to get over that and realize that, you know, people love spouting opinions on the internet. And then there's another side of finding out, like, you know, I really like somebody's comic, and I hope someday we'll be peers, and then finding out that they think my work is absolute shit, you know, and then you have to, again, realize it's just like everyone's got opinions, everyone's likes different things, but it's very defeating. I think in a regular job, if someone says your company is terrible, there's a lot of people that could apply to. If someone says your comic is terrible, it's just you. It's like, it's all you. It's sort of everything about you.
And when my comic sucks, it's also your fault.
Yeah, and I know. That's why it sucks. No.
I think the hardest thing I've ever done is kill off characters. It made me very sad.
I'm sorry, Shark.
See, like you know, early in Roomies, I like planned for a character to die, and it was almost like a very uplifting death. And like, yay, there's closure and everything, and sort of nice, even though she's dead, because I don't know, she felt nice in the last couple of minutes. But later, I killed off. I didn't create this later character to die originally, and so that was like a new decision. And I wanted it to be a different kind of death where it was like, you know, really terrible and horrible and make everyone depressed. And I finished drawing the last strip when she died, and I just sat there bawling at like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Do you make the sound effect again?
Here's your cycle.
Yeah.
What's wrong with me? She doesn't exist.
I think mine was probably just the from the business end. I think I promised Taco.
Well, you could call it that. What is that? Oh, that's my penis. What's that doing there? Anyway.
Why don't you find out?
Dick jokes.
Yeah. The hardest part is dick jokes. It really is.
Wonk, 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 wonk.
No, I effed up. I promised my readers, what was it? It was something like, When I started actually doing this full time, because I quit my job and I was doing freelance illustration, which is pretty hard for me because it means I have to focus on many different things. I'm not very good at that. So after a while, I was like, you know what? I think I can live off this comic. You know, I'll go ahead and just say, I need this much in order to live off of every month. If my readers will, you know, just donate this, I will start doing it 5 times a week and blah blah blah. And I gave all these little incentives, like, if you donate this much, blah, 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 happens. That was the stupidest idea ever, and I'm pretty sure some people, maybe some of you in here, I don't know, really fucking hate me, because I never followed through with it. I was like, oh, if you donate more than $20, I'll put your name into this hat, and then I'll pull your name, and then you might get a cameo in the strip. After,
just
like,
say no
thousands,
one won.
Yeah, they just all assume that it went.
There was that guy in the background, and yeah, hopefully they all assumed that. But I felt like...
Wow.
I mean, one of you, but I felt like such a jerk. Rejection is
bad. I love that she actually elbowed it. Shut your fucking mouth.
Rejection was never too hard for
if
me.
If that guy just stood up with a pistol and... It's a button on ass! And like...
It's a background.
You know, it's almost the anniversary. We're past the anniversary of John Lennon being shot, so... Oh, yes. That was... Oh, no.
Who is that?
Not a Transformer.
Beetletron Transformer.
Transformers, roll out.
You know, Yoko Ono would be a great Megatron.
Yeah. She destroys everything she touches.
What was the moment where you put up your first comic online? What was that moment like?
Well, it was on GeoCities in 1997. So it was a lot like using an FTP program and HTML. And I showed it to some people on IRC, and that was that. And they're like, oh, that's great.
Why did you do that?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, my friends are harder on me than, like, my readers.
Is so. That the first comic in your archive, if you go look for that comic?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wish it linked back to the GeoCities site.
GeoCities exists anymore.
No, there's a mirror.
No, but the largest torrent on the Pirate Bay is all of GeoCities in one torrent, which is amazing.
And I'm on there somewhere. Soho 3548.
Oh, are we talking about first comic ever or the first comic of our main strip?
First comic of the main strip.
Okay, that was December 19th, 2001. I had been working on the comic for 3 months. I had drawn the comic, and I actually removed the original drawings of Davin PG and his ex. And, like, I had cut the backgrounds, and I redrew the characters. And it was just something I just kind of did. I didn't think about it. It's like I had been reading a few other webcomics for a while, like Dr. Fun and Space Moose and All New Bob and Show and Wendy Comics. And I was like, I can do this. You know, it'll be fun. And I had some downtime. There wasn't a lot of shows going on. And so I posted it. I got home from work at 3:30. I posted it. I emailed 200 people I knew, either as friends or people I've known through theater. And, you know, bulk of them, like, that's kind of funny. My friend Kim, not Kim the comic, was very offended about this joke. And, you know, back alley abortions are a very painful thing. And I'm like, shut up, Kim. Just shut up. You know, then the next comic you love, but still, it was just really kind of awkward. And then I didn't think about it. I'll be honest. I was like, okay, I'll just do this for a while. And I figured I'd probably get bored of it in a couple months or I got better theater jobs. So it was just a completely unimportant event to me. I got it. I got it up, and I then poured myself some shots, as I did a lot that first year of my comic. Holy shit, did I drink a lot. 4 to 5 bottles of whiskey a week.
Wow.
And yet, I wasn't addicted. That's the best part. Like, one of my friends dared me to...
Sure.
One of my friends
You're
dared
still
me,
not.
I actually wasn't drinking. One of my friends dared me to stop drinking. I didn't drink for another year. And like, no tremors? Like, no. I'm not like drinking Thunderbird out in the alley.
I need my hobo wine.
I need my squeezins.
I started my comic specifically hoping that someday it would be my job. That was the reason I hated my job, and I wanted to have a better life, and I wanted to set a better example for my kid than doing jobs that you hate all the time and then dying. So the goal was figure out a comic and then make it, and then someday maybe that's your job. That was my plan. Like, that's a plan. And figure stuff out, do it, maybe someday good things happen. Profit, yeah. And originally my comic was going to be, I was going to take IM conversations between me and two of my friends and turn them into comics. And I couldn't figure out the logistics of it. Like, would you see the conversation? Would that be their text? Like, I don't know.
Would it include all the porn you swapped?
Yeah. And so I thought about that for like a month. And then I went and saw Spider-Man 3 on my birthday. And we left. And I was like, that was the opposite of a birthday. That was everything a birthday is not supposed to be. And I was like, oh, I've got my first comic. And I went home, I made the comic, and I emailed it to like 7 people. And I put it online, and then I emailed that link to like 7 people, and just kept doing it after that.
You know, I like Spider-Man 3.
You have a taste, I don't know. You're a bad person, I guess.
It wasn't your birthday.
I was satisfied.
Drawing the actual comic is the thing I do the least.
Yeah.
And I hate that, but at the same time, it's still a better job. You know, even when things are hard, even when I'm behind, I'm happier now than I was in my last. The only job I've ever enjoyed as much was working for the university. But every other job I had was
working
like,
for the universe. I sat on a mountain and meditated.
No, because then you have some fucking asshole coming and interrupt your meditation.
Tofu humping hippies.
I stand by that rage. I realize that's what some people in Austin. How dare you?
I did tech support for the universe. People would be like, you know, what's going on? What's it all mean? And like, I can take your question. I'm happy to help you.
Unplug your reality.
Yeah, unplug it back in. I've tried that.
Sir,
I'm only getting one light that's blinking.
I can't find the any key.
That was one of my jobs, face-to-face Hewlett Packard tech support.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, that's a good one. What was the worst job we all had before being a cartoonist?
Let's go with that. So this is both a horrible and an awesome job. I worked in a theme restaurant. It was called Mars 2112, and the idea was that people come into this really spacey, postmodern place, they ride a simulator ride, and then when they get out of the simulator ride, they go into the restaurant, and it's Mars in the year 2112. And there's all these
so we shake you up before we give you pasta.
And when it was determined that I was not a good person at seating people well, because I was on a server, I was a host, I decided, you know what? I like running the spaceship. No one else gives a damn about running the spaceship right, you know, with the speech and everything, they just put you on it and everything. So I spent like 14 hours every weekend in like a dark room. I like every 4 minutes I bring in like 24 people, a set number of people to fit into the seats, put them into the simulator ride. I give them a speech, prepared speech every single time. Close the door, you know, give them a little salute and everything. I'm wearing like a Star Trek uniform. And then as soon as it closes, I rearrange everything in the room, turn on black lights, and then after the ride is over, I let them out. Hey, you're in Mars now, blah, blah, blah. And this was, you know, 14 hours every day, 4 minutes, 4 minutes in 4 minute increments.
Oh my God.
And they often forgot I was in there, and so I usually didn't get lunch. And I would get in trouble if I leave the area, so I had to, like, if, like...
Spaceship boy, get back in the spaceship!
I opened the door, it's like, hey, can you hear me over here?
The restaurant's been closed for 3 hours.
I'm still in the spaceship! And that was both awesome, because it could have been fun, and I tried to make it fun as best I could, but it was grueling. I did make my best use of my time in there. I mean, I brought in scrap pieces of paper. I was the only person who worked there who got a chair. Although, at some point, people got... there were times when people decide, well, I don't think that's fair. And so I don't think you should be able to get a chair.
I don't think it's fair you get to see the light.
Hey, you get a state-mandated lunch. Lick my balls.
I'll just sit there and like, doodle stuff from my comics and get things like organized and all this like ash can stuff. And that was very helpful, but also very mind-numbing.
Yeah.
I feel like all the shitty jobs that I had were still, like, there's something entertaining about them. I always made the best out of them, even the worst ones. But the one that I had right after I graduated college was just a temp job. I had, like, the temp agency on speed dial at all times because I was an artist. You need to have that, I felt like, costing temp jobs. But I did, like, I had to wake up at, like, 5:30 in the morning to get to this job. Imagine me trying to get up at 5:30 in the morning this time that I went to bed last night that doesn't exist otherwise. I was working for Pepsi, and we were the call center. Anybody who had a problem with their Pepsi machine would call us. And we had like a 7-state radius of like all these people that would call us. There were like 17 of us working on it on any random day. And there's Pepsi machines everywhere. So they would call us, and then we would page the problem to the nearest mechanic and send them out to them. That was our job. And I got so good at telling from the accents where people were from that I could literally type in the first 3 numbers of their zip code after just like a minute of hearing them. And they said, you know, Pepsi machines broke. It's either Kentucky or Southern Virginia. you know, regular Pepsi, or, you know, maybe they say Coke or something like that because that's what we do in Maryland. Maryland, you know, soda is Coke. And then
we do that in Texas. Oh, I'd like a Coke. What kind? Sprite.
Yes. So, you know, you got those. And then my fucking Pepsi machines broke. Jersey.
Pepsi machine doesn't work over here.
The best call I ever had to send out, or best page, was cat stuck in machine, please remove.
Poor cat.
Also, please wash. Also, please wash after removing cat. My worst job, is everyone familiar with Austin-based Sweetleaf Tea Company?
I am not.
It's delicious tea.
You won't be drinking it after this story.
It's with an asterisk. I was their first employee, and when they were based in Southeast Texas, in a little town called Beaumont, a little shithole refinery town called Beaumont.
I'm from Lake Charles.
We were in the back of a medical supply warehouse is where they started. There were crutches and oxygen canisters and wheelchairs everywhere. And they had built out a space out of plywood. There was like a plywood cube in the back of this medical warehouse. It was like 20 by 20 by 20. And inside that, they had built a... you know those bug trucks with that spray poison? One of those canisters was the tea vat. They claimed it was a new one, so I'm assuming it wasn't poison. And then there was like all this makeshift hosing and like hose clamps that went over to these gumbo pots. And the gumbo pots is where we boiled the tea, and they were up on this scaffolding, and so you had to get up on this long scaffolding to stir them with boat oars. The tea we put into pillowcases, tied it up, threw it in the gumbo pot, stabbed it with a boat oar for like 20 minutes, and then there was this series of valves. There was a business guy and a hippie, and the hippie was the only one that knew how to work the valves. And so you're like, my thing's done, and I've stabbed it with the oar enough, I guess. And he has to come over, and he's like, if we do this in the wrong order, man, everything's gonna go to shit, and we'll have to start over. So it's like, turn this one, and okay, crank that. Now you press that one with your foot, okay, and like it starts to flow like mad scientists going all through the air. He would get shocked at least once because there was bare wires everywhere. And then it flows into the canister and it fills up the DDT vat or whatever. And then they had bought this, this 6-bottle filling machine, but it was a cheap one. And so we would hand line up six, like 16-ounce bottles, and then you would like turn that on, and it would fill like this one this high, this one this high, this one this high, this one this high. And then you couldn't turn the machine back on because the ones that were full would overflow. So then you took like a pitcher, like a Kool-Aid pitcher, and like filled. And it's like you go to the store and you're like, let me get this bottle. Good tea. Like we were hand filling the pitcher. And then to put the caps on, we had a drill with a capper, and you would like, wow, like, but it would like, it would go too tight and strip it and like rip the bottle top off and you'd start over. And they went down this little tiny conveyor belt onto a rotating table, and like if one fell over, they would all just pile up on top of it. It was just this comedy of errors every day. And the best part about that job was I had replied, I was at a cake concert in Houston. There was a hippie, and I was like, you like cake? He's like, yeah, man, I love cake. Hey, I make tea. And I'm like, oh, cool, I need a job. Where are you from? Beaumont. Oh, man, I'm from Beaumont. Here's my card. We need a driver. And I'm like, shit, yeah, I'll be a driver for a tea company. I show up for my interview, and they hand me my apron. And I'm like, the driver needs an apron? Just put the apron on, man. And I'm like, all right. And I'm like, I guess the hippie didn't remember our conversation. And so I'm like, is this the interview? Grab this oar, man.
Interviewer, amazing.
Yeah. You probably don't want to wear clothes that nice next time, man. And all your clothes are going to be smelling like tea. And I'm like, what's, I think I work here now. It was a complete shock. Every label we put on by hand, like pull the sticker off, wrap it around the bottle. Only 1,000 more to go. And I was there for 6 months trying to figure out how to quit every day. But it was my first job, and I felt like I owed them something. I didn't know what. And it's like, today's going to be the day. Today's going to be the day. Here's your oar, man. And I'm like, today's not going to be the day. Why can't today be the day?
American Medical Response was my shittiest job ever. I was Medicaid billing.
Oh,
Jesus.
Not just for Massachusetts.
You were a dream breaker.
I was a dream fucker. I do children's parties.
All right, audience questions.
All right, your deepest, darkest secret about the two that just left. No.
Lately, Hollywood's kind of been beating down the doors of graphic novelists to make adaptations, i.e., like even George Perdition, Red, Walking Dead, things like that. Do you see yourself as part of that? And do you think if you had gone the more traditional, you know, paper publishing route, working with a publisher as opposed to one, you know, independent webcomic, that you would have those opportunities?
He
wouldn't have that opportunity because he wouldn't own his product.
Yeah,
none of us would. And honestly, none of us could be making the products we have now.
I guess I'm thinking of Scott Pilgrim, where does he own that at all?
He does.
Okay.
He sold them movie rights.
Yeah.
Oh, he's an amazing publisher.
Yeah,
that's true. I shouldn't say everything's like that. But you're saying if it is more traditional, if it's Marvel DC, it's probably...
I think it's more likely to happen to people who are published because I guess people think of that as more real.
Yeah.
But I mean, if someone really likes your comic, it probably doesn't really matter what the format is. They'll make something out of it. But
It hasn't happened yet, and I think it'll happen soon.
Yeah.
I think you'll see one of our peer group pulled into mainstream Hollywood and then like spat out a few years later and then see what happens.
If it's not Phil Folio, I will be very disappointed.
Aww,
it should be Girl Genius.
You really wanted to see him spat out?
Way to be a douchebag. I think Girl Genius probably has potential above other things, and steampunk is very popular.
That's true.
So.
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool.
That could be turned into a sort of a Harry Potter style movie.
It could be Harry Potter. It could be a kid's series. It could be a
I got a phone call to make.
I'm really looking forward to Pumpkin.
Yeah.
Yeah, no one cares about Pumpkin.
I do.
For those of you that don't know, the best webcomic ever is called Pumpkin. It's about a pumpkin that's also a dog.
Yeah. It was so horrible. Written by a troll.
It was sublime.
Yeah. I did a parody of it once. It was Choo Choo Bear in a pumpkin costume saying, "Thank you for loving Choochkin." And I posted it somewhere, and a reader saw it, and he said, "You know, I read that comic just you know, for ironic reasons. Like, you don't read it for ironic reasons. But he's like, I like to tell myself that Choo Choo Bear killed Pupkin and hollowed him out. Inside him. I was like, that's cool. I'm up with that. We're going to start webcomic drama.
You can't start with a guy.
I guess along those lines, I know a bunch of you guys have been having some guest comics. Who do y'all like to do guest comics for, and who do you like to do your guest strips?
I like anybody to do my guest strips.
You don't have to work, it's great.
I mean, do y'all like have specific favorites or ones that y'all do more frequently?
I mean, if it's someone I know and admire, it's of course,
yeah,
way cooler. I mean, anybody on this table. That'd be awesome.
So. I enjoyed the one that, you know, Joel did, and I
that's really, my favorite one ever.
I generally don't do too many guest strips because
yes.
I have readers.
That's my favorite of Randy's comics. Is the yes. one.
I just try to avoid it because, you know, you have a lot of people who get really pissy about it and have, you know, their pissy
fits. They beat it into them. They get used to it eventually.
I did guest strips this year because I developed an elbow injury on my drawing arm, and the doctor's like, you're not drawing for a while. Yeah. It's like, unless you want to make this a permanent thing. I was like, oh, I guess I kind of don't. But I enjoy doing guest strips. I did one for Danielle that was a lot of fun. It was like a nice 12-panel Thanksgiving strip.
It's like 5 in the morning on his birthday. He's like, texting me, I got done, and I'm just like, isn't that your birthday?
Yeah. Not anymore.
I'm like ladling ice cream cake in my face, like all by myself.
No,
I'm like, oh, my
opposite.
Yes, that would be the opposite.
Joel had Spider-Man 3.
Yeah. To be fair, mine was worse.
I also enjoy doing it for Jeff Jacks because it's like either people really like it and they'll get readers out of it, or I get some of the best hate mail. In fact, I just found two pieces of art from the first guest trip I did for him, which I got an onslaught of enraged, indignant emails because it was the character Faye is she wakes up in her old backyard and sees her father there. And she's like, Dad, you know, I've asked so many questions. Why'd you do this? And he's like, oh, honey, fat girls don't get daddies. The joke is, because they're like, oh, face fat. No, she's not. I don't understand that joke. But it's something that all his readers say. And then it turns out it's two of the robots are fucking with her. And like, people are like, isn't that mean? Yeah, it's completely mean. Well, wouldn't you be pissed? I'm like, yeah, you should be pissed. That's fine. But I got one woman emailed me, and I love this. She's like, I'm very overweight. My father committed, I didn't see it. This is the funniest fucking thing I have ever seen in my life. You're my new friend. I'm sending you free shit.
My favorite guest strips were the one I did for Randy and one that I did for Jeff. The one I did for Randy was right after you shaved your beard, or right before you shaved your beard. But he had full on hobo beard. And in the comic, he tries to shave it and it fights back. Well, he tries to shave it and then crows fly out of it. And then he tries to shave it, and like it grows beard tentacles and beats him to death. And then in the end, it's enveloped his entire body and gone inside his mouth, and his eyes are just wide.
A cocoon from the ceiling.
He's cocooned in the beard, and then the beard's typing hate mails to his face.
I loved that strip. I was so excited to post it.
And the one I did for Jeff that I really liked, I did... Martin and Hannelore are going to Comic-Con for the first time, and she's terrified by all the people that... She's like, there's so many people in terrifying costumes. He's like, Spider-Man. He's like, fat Spider-Man's not terrifying. But fat Batman's a little terrifying, but fat Spider-Man's not terrifying. And then they turn the corner, and there's a Klingon furry. So it's got like a giant fursuit Klingon. He's like, today is a good day for hugs! And like... And then she runs away and goes and hides in a broom closet, and then Jeff's in the closet, too. He's like, Klingon furry? Yeah. But when I have guest comics on my comic, I like to let my readers do them. Just if they might not necessarily have their own comic, but I might know through some forum post or whatever that they do good art. And I'll ask for, you know, ideas, not full comics, because the last thing I would hate for someone to do is, like, make a full comic, then I can't post it because it's weird or terrible or something. And And that's happened once, and it made me feel really bad. I was like, you always put a lot of work into this, but it's just not going to work on my site. And, God, it doesn't make any sense. And, you know, like, but I have a couple of readers that are just super talented artists. And one of them is this girl in Finland named Didu. And I love Didu so much. She hand paints comics for me, and then she sends me the paintings when they're done, and they're just beautiful. And the sense of humor fits my comic, and, like, I don't know why you're not making your own comics, but hey, whatever. And I like to, like, showcase the community talent, I guess, as it were. And then I've had a few comics where people are like, I want to do a guest comic for you, and I have my own. And we kind of collaborate on them. Like, they might do a gaming comic and not know what my comic's about, so we collaborate on the script, and then they draw it. And I think it's not just giving back because it gives them some traffic to whatever their project is, but it also kind of, I think it uplifts the community to showcase their creativity as well, you know, on the site. So.
Yeah. I hate running guest posts. I feel so bad whenever I do, because it's like taking off a week of work, and not even for a good reason usually. Like, lately, it was a good reason, but still, I'm just exhausted and I've had too much going on and I've been traveling.
I don't know. I think that there's not going to be a comic otherwise is a pretty decent reason.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But at least, I've got some specific people that,
I'm going to have to ask for guest trips soon. I'm going to my honeymoon.
Oh.
Yeah, but we're busy.
Hit me up.
I'll do one.
Ooh. I'll do one.
Sweet. That's
done.
Week.
The saddest kitten ever.
I'll take it.
I like any
last week of December.
This week has been me drawing depressing kitten pictures and showing them to Dave. We get him go. Like the fat little kitten looking down at his mommy. Why won't mommy wake up? Who did you? And then Jeff eats a candy cream.
Keep special kitty away.
Alright, so next question. In the back there.
Me?
Yes, you.
Awesome, okay. So you guys all write 5 days a week, or?
I do three.
I do two comics 5 days a week.
Okay.
I do about 5 days.
I want to know about your creative process. I mean, that's kind of a lot of your life.
Is anyone else getting nervous that she's looking at a book?
Yeah, I was like, part the first.
I open my grimoire.
So here's.
I want to know the good, the bad, and the ugly about your creative process. Like, how do you go into that every day?
Here's how it starts.
That's what I'd like to know.
I get up in the morning, it's like, all right, I have to draw two comics today at some point. And like, at 4 o'clock, it's like, keep fine. I have to, like, get into my my sensory deprivation chamber, which is the shower. I stand in the shower. And
I can attest to this. That works pretty well. Also poops.
That can't be poops. There's so much reading there. That's where my QC book is.
And that's where it should stay.
Wow.
He's not here to defend himself. It's only
it
fair.
The
it's
viper
only,
comes from the shadow.
It's only fair. Silly frog, it is my nature.
Anyway, I run up the water bill a lot.
You're like, we've had 4 showers and no scrub. You're like, another shower.
Just wrinkled flesh coming off his body.
Spirits of evil.
If it's not like scalding me, it's not hot enough.
Transform this decrepit form into David Willis.
I don't get that reference.
Mumra?
Because it had no robots
Thunder
in
cats?
It.
That show was gay.
Thunder fucking cats? Come on.
You were so dumb.
Who are you?
That's like a bunch of furries. I don't watch
whatever,
that.
Whatever, man.
They're all naked? What is that?
What is the robot equivalent of a furry? Is that like a techie?
No. There is Transformers
Oh, don't cover your ears, boy.
Like, what's the word? There's Transformers Yowie, basically.
It's all Starscream and Megatron.
Climb inside me, Spike.
No, seriously. There's it's Optimus Prime and Megatron, and they're like, we should be fighting, but we can't. And then for some reason, they have human genitals. And then there's panels of clang, 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 clang.
Clang, 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 on trolley.
I mean, so I've heard.
And then what they thought of that was Odin's face.
That's amazing.
The only thing I can think of scarier than that is scaly porn.
What is that?
Basically, lizards aren't furry. There's a cartoonist showed me, he's like, oh, look at this, and it's basically, it was a website just of dinosaur porn. And then we actually found a pterodactyl pornographic movie, which I posted on Twitter and got a lot of unfollows.
I assume that answers your question.
I'm sorry, writing process, yeah. No. Actually, I don't own any porn, and I actually have only seen two porn movies in my life.
One being
porn. Yeah, and actually, honestly, one of them was the pterodactyl porn.
The other one was E.T.
I get up and I will start working. And I basically open Notepad. I will write the script. I will kind of look where I have also a list of what are the key plot points I have to hit within the year. And then what spaces can I just fill with whatever I want to do? And I look where I need to be, and I'll sit and I'll write the script out. I'll describe each panel, what's going on in the panel. Then I'll if I can't think of anything, I will find a way to distract myself. I will hot baths and reading does help. Taking walks. I live near my family to help them out some. So, do errands for my parents so they can, have time to do other things. And the whole time I'll be Either you can sit there and try to think about it, or if you distract yourself enough, sometimes you'll go right back
just
to it.
Happens, yeah.
Yeah, and then I'll go back and I'll work. I will draw the panels out with a photocopy blue pencil. I ink them with a 1.0 sacrographic marker, and I scan them into Photoshop CS2.
We talked all about technology yesterday, so I think maybe we didn't talk about writing very much. So that's probably a good place to go. I don't do a story. All my comics are topical about geek pop culture, and they're hopefully humorous. And so I'm not working on a big arc or anything, which means every time I start, I'm in a blank canvas. I don't have anything to build off of.
I would love that.
It's kind
of, I'm glad I don't have that.
No, because if your characters are in a room talking, it's much easier to figure out what the next thing they would say is versus starting over from a blank slate. But I like doing it this way. And what I do is, so I read the internet for a few hours. I look for stories that have a.
I gotta say, kitten videos really helped me.
Yeah. I look for a story that has some sort of nugget in it that is like untapped humor, and I star in my Google Reader anything that has potential. When I get done with my sight reading, I go back and look at what I starred. I pick one. And then I open a notepad, and I just start typing stream of conscious. I just throw everything at the wall. Most of my scripts, even though I only do three panels with just a little bit of text, most of my scripts are like this long on notepad. And then I open another notepad, and I'm like, that's the funniest line from there, that's the funniest line from there, that's the funniest line from there. And I throw all that away. And actually, most of anything else that's kind of funny, like Second Level, makes it into my blog post, so that kind of helps too.
Sabrina's blog.
That's my not so good jokes. And then I take the few lines that I thought were great, and I figure out how to turn those into a conversation. If I've got to hit, I've got to have them in the right order. There's got to be a build up. There's got to be a flow to it. There's got to be a payoff. Maybe multiple payoffs. I don't like doing jokes that are like first panel. Hey, Bill, what's going on? Nothing, Ted. Second panel, did you see that thing? I sure did. Third panel, punchline. And, I really, really hate that joke structure, and I think that permeates a lot of, so-called, comedy comics. So I try and, if that's 1-2-3, I try and go, 3-2-F. or like 3290 or whatever. Like I try and do it in a different order, maybe in a way that wasn't quite expected. The writing takes anywhere from an hour to a couple of days on a comic. And typically I'll be struggling, take a shower, and then the end pops into my head. And then the drawing takes 4 to 6 hours usually.
I don't know how you live, man. I can probably do both of my comics about 2.5 hours.
I'm going to beat the shit out of you.
It takes me like 4 hours to draw a strip. It takes me, same thing. Wow. It can either be only be.
Dave, in fairness, we know how to draw.
Oh. What's this we?
Danielle knows how to draw.
She has the best art.
I was hoping to jump on those coattails, but it didn't stick.
I don't wear coats. It takes me, like, you know, 4 hours to do a strip now because I'm doing color. It used to take me an hour and a half to 2 hours. Really makes me want to kill myself that I have to do color now. But that was my decision, so I will just lie in that bed. The writing takes, it really is. It's, you know, sometimes it's like a few minutes because you're just like, oh, I totally know what's going to go on. Tick joke. Or it's like a day and a half, and like, oh, how do I carefully construct this STD conversation so that I don't offend everybody and still represent the gay community? And it's a great idea.
It's very political.
Horrible. But I mean, it's great, but it's oh god. It's the internet, so I'm really concerned about what I'm going to get the next day in my inbox, and you know, so that's trouble.
Yeah, those sticky subjects are less touched on. They're fun to do, but you have to really think them through.
Jeff and I were talking about this last night. This is probably up until 5 in the morning talking about transvestites. We were trying to, you're like, man, it would be so great to bring, you know, a trans character in, but we know what would happen. Everybody would
email us
and hate it.
No, Jeff's exact quote was, as soon as I introduced the trans character, all the emails and Twitters are, Martin fucks the tranny.
Years ago, I had someone ask why I didn't put a trans character in my comic, and it was pretty blunt. I was like, I don't know enough about that community, and I don't want to add stigma or, look, wacky tranny. No, that's offensive.
They all have tap shoes.
Most people in that community have to deal with enough bullshit that I don't want to ever feel like, oh, look what I just added to your problem.
They should totally talk like Jar Jar.
Who was, of course, the only transvestite in Star Wars.
I'm pretty sure that was Jabba.
So, you're racist.
It's true.
To be more specific, though, since you are asking this question, and you did have a book in the first studios, I have a notebook that I... it's just like a regular spiral-bound college rule notebook, and on the left side, I brainstorm and come up with all these ideas, and it's just basically like a wall of text and a bunch of lines through everything, because you're just trying to shorten and condense everything, you know, like, what can I use? Can I use one word for these five words? Can I shorten this portion? It's so much, I mean, Twitter is great, great practice, because we're just sitting there like 140 characters. How can I tell a whole story in this? It's the same thing as doing a comic.
You know what kills me is, writing is editing. Writing is just editing. Mm-hmm. That's the only way it becomes good, funny, or believable. But the thing I've learned with Twitter is whenever there's a meme that's like, okay, now all my Twitter friends are trying to make the same kind of joke, you know, hashtag whatever, it's practice for being on your toes. And so sometimes you lose a bunch of followers because you're trying to outdo each other with, you know, fat indie bands or whatever, like last week. And it was, and when I finally came up with crepes and crepes for tapes and tapes, I was like, I'm done! But it's joke practice. It's like how I have no space, and I have to fit in the hashtag, and if I'm talking to someone, I gotta fit in their name. So what can I do with 18 characters? And it's like boot camp. It forces you. Yeah. And I think the same with comics is panel size. I kept reducing my panel size. Or if you get the first book, it's like giant comic, not so giant, not so now they're tiny, and it's like. Because with all of that panel size, I would, it's sort of like vocal masturbation. It was just like, you know, and then I'm going to go over here and say this thing, and then the other guy says a bunch of stuff too, and then the third guy comes in and he's like, hey bros, how's it going? And there's just walls and walls and walls of text, and then you realize the only funny thing about that is this one part, and then you delete all of it, leave in that one part, and you've accomplished the same thing. So Twitter's great practice for that.
I don't really keep a notepad file of gags much anymore. I used to, like, years ago, but I like that. But it's just like a list of, like, phrase blurbs just coming out of her. It's like a subject that I want to make fun of, and that's it.
That happens a lot for me, like where I do get a funny three-word phrase in my head, and then you have to figure out how to make a comic around it.
I usually make the worst comics with those ones. Like Thea getting restless leg syndrome instead of like an actual STD because it was going to be herpes, but herpes isn't funny.
Yeah. I don't know.
I thought it was
weeping
so
sores?
Funny.
It was. I love that.
But everybody else was like, oh, okay. And yeah, that's funny. Is that weird in like your in that world that happens? And I'm just like, yeah, it's funny. Restless leg syndrome? That's hilarious. I didn't write it the way that I wanted to, but it was like the one joke that I'm like, I know what I'm going towards. This is like my goal, and the goal kind of boil.
It happens though. Sometimes it just doesn't work the way you want.
Yeah,
I have a lot of I have a file of those like 3-word phrases that I never figured out how to make into comics that I must save. Maybe there'll be a T-shirt someday. I don't know, but it's like I did struggle. I tried to make it into a funny comic, but in the end, it was just a 3-word phrase, and it maybe. Or you save them for Twitter. Throw it out there on Twitter and see if anybody laughs at it, and then you get it out of your system. I find that with those idea files that a lot of us keep, if you just need to get it out before you can move on. Like, I've been stuck on, this is the funniest thing I'm ever going to come up with, and I'm never going to think of anything funnier, and I never find a place to put it, and eventually I...
It's true.
Actually, this guy's wearing a shirt that was one of those. It says, Riker, I hardly knew her. And to me, that was super funny because I'm a big Star Trek fan. And I started with that, and then I made a comic around it, and then I made a shirt around it, and then I'm like, okay, I'm done with that stupid idea now. Like, I can do something else that's been in my brain stuck for so long.
We've got like 20 minutes left. Should I just take another question?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Odin,
gentleman up front.
So one thing that I thought was interesting that recently developed, and actually read all four of you, and three of you, there was this development where, not to spoil anything for Courtney who hasn't read everything, but two cats had a bunch of babies, and now there's like this whole huge shared universe. Like,
I'm sorry, there's a point where you can't call spoilers. That happened in April. If you haven't read
it
now,
internet, come on.
Yeah. Okay, so what? Like, how did that come about, and what do you guys think about it?
Should I tell?
Maybe that's the question.
You're better.
All right, so we did a Danielle did a crossover in September, where two of her characters were getting married, and one of my characters crashed the wedding, just helped crashing it. Originally, we've been talking about how can we do a crossover, and we've been trying and couldn't dig up something. And then, she set up this website, and I just kind of, it just kind of happened. And then I did this one-off strip because I couldn't think of how. Because Davin, once we started doing it, realized Davin has no reason to interact with Wedding Party at all. He can interact with Candy, but the main character is just whatever. But I did a one-off strip where Choo Choo Bear hits on Sprinkles. And I made a joke like, hey, there could be kittens. She's like, yeah, whatever. And, I think it was late December or early January. I called her up to check your mailbox. And she's like, email. She's like, what? I said, look. And I had, for no reason, drawn two kittens on what would happen if Sprinkles and Choo Choo Bear had kittens. And I heard, eee! And she's like, I want to draw kittens. That's what happens. You want to draw more kittens. And so she designed, like, I drew the one that's my comic I designed, and there's one that's kind of like a little Dalmatian that I designed. And she drew kind of the fat kitty and the special kitty. And they were like, well, then we decided, okay, we're doing this, and it's going to happen. So I did strips where that alluded to Choo Choo Bear stealing jewelry from the character PG and giving it to his girlfriend, and she made a trip referencing it too. And then we have kittens, and like, well, crap, like, do you want to keep four kittens in your comic? It's like getting surprise kittens in real life. Oh, God, what do I do with these?
So
just like real life, you put them in a sack and throw them in the river.
And so we kind of put out a call to certain people we knew, like, who wants a kitten?
There's a wild pig, too, I think.
Yeah.
And we're like, who wants a kitten? And every person who was there, we're like, oh, I'll take one. And so Dave and Bill from All New Issues took a kitten, and that's how it happened. It was just one day I said, hey, wouldn't it be funny if this happened? Look what I drew, and she wanted to draw kittens as well.
Kittens.
And now Choo Choo Bear is listed as a cast member of both SP and Girls with Slingshots. Like, he's in her cast.
I didn't even ask.
No, you did ask.
Okay.
You asked just why I cared. I don't give a shit. Okay. So that's how that happened, basically. We just thought it'd be funny, and now we've connected more comics to each other.
Now we have kittens together. Cutest cats on the internet. I'm saying that like I didn't create them.
Well, we also did like a random like who's going to get which kitten. And originally Danielle was going to give me the special kitten.
So I didn't want to draw the headgear.
And the thing is, I practiced for 3 days. I was getting the special kitten right. Oh, she, never mind. I want to keep the special kitten. Like,
render clothing. My boss a heart attack. She jumps every time there's a left.
She's had her hand up the whole time.
Okay.
Who? You!
What was your favorite part about your strip?
That's all point.
You were!
Do it casually. Oh. Put some venom in there.
I'm a girl.
That's a weird question.
For me, just getting to develop my art has been my favorite thing to do.
What was the question?
What's your favorite part about your comic?
Oh, okay.
That, and also just randomly just... I enjoy the weird, stupid side jokes that seem like they go nowhere, but end up popping up later. Like, no, trapdoor alligators. You know? Can't know how to end a storyline? Trapdoor alligator gun them. I did that entire sexual harassment storyline just so I could draw a trapdoor alligator. And I had so many people pissed at me about that. I was like, I don't care, it wasn't for you, it was for me.
That's how it goes a lot for me. It's like, yeah, it's not for you, it's for me.
Now we're Kevin Smith. It wasn't for you, critics.
It's not for critics, man.
Or really anybody.
The emails and feedback that I get from people who say, you know, your comic, with all the little subcultures and, you know, what's the word for like nuances and strange kind of characters, the ones who are like, man, I can really relate to that character. I'm so glad I can, you know, that you have this character in here. That always makes me happy. I get an email, maybe like an email every 6 months from somebody, from a girl who says, you know, I'm heavy set. I have always covered up, you know, my entire body because I'm so ashamed of it. And now after reading Jamie, my boyfriend and I went out and, you know, went shopping specifically to like feel more comfortable with myself. And that shit brings tears to my eyes. A lot. So that's the best part.
We forward those emails to Randy and he ruins her life.
I'll take care of this problem. Don't worry.
Yeah, got it. Covered. Next crossover.
I always like the compliments when people say, I really love Ethan. He's gay and he's a collector and it's not how he's just gay all the time. He just happens to be gay.
His boyfriend's the best part.
Yeah.
I like that too. Like I never did that. I like Randy. Yeah, yeah. No, I never did that on purpose. But like, I based the comic on me and two of my friends, and one of them's gay, and so it never came up in the comic until it was relevant, and it never came up in a way that was anything but a side note, and then a lot of people were like emailing me like, oh shit, he's gay, I never knew. And I'm like, you don't know when you see somebody. No. You know, you don't.
No, you do.
You don't walk around, you're like, hi, my name's
like Dave does.
Yeah.
Bill, I'm gay. You know, it just doesn't happen. So
it's always depressing when someone's like, oh, you write gay characters so well. I'm like, I just treat them like everyone else. I mean, it's not like...
Oh, I know some humans. And
it's not...
But the thing is, it's surprising. And what's sad about it, though, is that people have to think that. Because it's not like I say... And I'm like, first and foremost, the character's name is Josh, and I'm like, first and foremost, he's an asshole. Tenth, maybe he's gay. Somewhere in there, he's a glutton. Like, I mean, these are not. That's not even on the top list of his characteristics. You know, not in the top 10 hardly. So, like, I got emails from a guy that writes for After Elton, and he always links to my comic now if there's ever anything even slightly gay in it, because he's like, it's so fun to see. It's so fun to see it not like a sitcom gay, where it's an afterthought, where it's like...
annoying Jack character from...
Yes, where it's like, do you guys want to go see the movie? I want to go see this one! And it's like, you know, it's like, and, you know, we've had our gay moment for the week.
It's just, musicals and shoes!
Yeah, it's just terrible. And I like that no one... Now that I've realized people's reaction to it, I even try to handle it in a way that like no one ever addresses it. Like I had one where Josh says, oh my god, I'm totally gay for Fringe. And I was like, and my character says, I thought you were totally gay for dudes. And then they move on. Like, that's, like that was the only time it's addressed. And, if you just start reading the comic, you probably don't know for 3 months because I never talk about it until it matters. And I never expected that. You know, I never expected there to be any sort of social conscience in my comic or anything. But yeah, you treat people like human beings and all of a sudden everyone's surprised.
What?
Bullshit.
I'm done here.
We got time for just a few more questions. You there? You've been playing kind of a few times.
This is kind of a tricky question, but over the years, the webcomic industry and just how it's progressed has changed a lot. You know, you come from just Sunday newspapers to you can put something out there and it can grow exponentially. How has your view on the industry changed from when you first started your webcomic to how you view it today?
When I was, I guess, back when I was growing up, but I guess being in a newspaper was the only way you could do it, and I assume that was, I mean, I don't know if I was going to end up doing that, but that would be really, really nice. But these days, like, I don't want to do that. Newspapers are dying. That's like jumping into a sinking ship. It's
a sunk ship,
you know? A sunk ship, yeah.
Yay! I grew up wanting to, I knew I wanted to draw always, and then in high school, I started making my first serialized comics for my high school newspaper. And I thought, man, this is like an awesome way to get a joke out, and especially if people like it. And so I started looking into newspaper comics and realized how impossible it was to break into that industry, and it was just super defeating. So I stopped drawing for like 7 years. I guess I felt like if I can't go all the way with this, I'm just not even going to do it anymore, which is maybe not the best attitude to have about it, but I didn't even know there were web comics until there were a bunch of them. Like, I mean, there were plenty. There was at least several dozen quality-ish webcomics before I even realized such a thing existed. And I was like, wait, so like between now and tomorrow, I could put a comic on the internet, and that's how it's done now. There's no one to tell me not to. There's no barrier to entry. There's no editor. There's no approval process. Which is also why there's a bunch of terrible comics,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
But
there's terrible ones in syndication as
exactly.
Well,
all of them, really. Most of them.
Most of them.
99% of them. So
Jeffy got a word confused.
Last night there was some thing on the news about how one of those soap opera comics is being canceled.
Brenda Starr is canceled.
After 70 years.
Holy crap.
70.
And the end of this year.
Yeah.
Brenda Starr is ending.
Jesus.
That was sad.
Why?
I like
the eyes.
You like cold dead eyes.
The art was really nice, and the writer and the artist really seemed like they really believed.
Whatever.
Yeah. They seem like really excited to draw Annie every day. It's like nobody else cares.
But especially if you compare like the art from Annie to the art for Dick Tracy, where they're always like, we don't.
Yeah,
every day struggle not to make a dick joke.
I mean,
good job, guys.
Other legacy strips, it just felt like, you know, they told us to make this, and this is the only way we can be a newspaper, so we'll do it, but we didn't really like it. But the guys who did Annie really felt like,
they
really want to draw Annie.
Well, they're talking about they want to do like graphic novels, which I wish them all the luck in the world with that.
The biggest difference between how it used to be and how it's going to be in the future is there was a, just like network TV, there everything had to be pretty watered down because it had to appeal to everybody, because you don't know, you have no way of knowing who buys the newspaper. All you know is that there are numbers and addresses, and that's it, you know? And so everything had to appeal, or at least not offend, pretty much everybody.
That's
and with
humor.
Yeah, exactly. and with comics or any content on the internet, you don't have to appease hardly anybody. You can find your audience, and it could be completely different from everyone else's audience. If you only need 30,000 readers to support yourself, they might not read any other comics. You know, they might just read yours. And there's enough people out there that, and no kids on bicycles have to deliver the internet. You know, like so it's much easier to get it out there.
But that would be cool. We're no longer subjugated that we have to have people who have foots in certain industries. It's nice. We create our own delivery model. When I first started, I was like a year in, someone contacted me, they're trying like for a weekly, and they wanted to have SP in this weekly paper, and just the contract they offered me was so horrible. And it included a whole thing of basically they would own the comic and could replace me. I could lose it. I'm like, why would I sign? I'm like, well, it's industry standard. I'm like, well, I'm not part of that industry.
Nice.
And they just seemed so befuddled that I didn't want to be in a weekly newspaper, but you're just online. Like, I'm read 80, by that time, 80,000 people were reading my comic daily. Why do I need this? And it's, if anything, it showed us that, you know, technology will open opportunities, and it'll kill some, you know, kill some opportunities, and it sucks for a lot of the newspaper cartoonists who they believe in that model and will not consider deviating. But it's also taught me nothing is permanent, and, you know, we have to realize that there may be something that comes along and takes away the web. You know, a lot of people view the comics on their phones now. What's going to replace this? And we have to either be ready to move along with that, or we'll be in the exact same boat as all these people, you know, the Ted Rawls and, you know, John Wileys, who scream and stamp their feet about how the web is stealing from them.
Yeah,
I talked to a couple of newspaper cartoonists, and I've seen a few different ideas. One of them being like, I know what's happening, and please tell me what you're doing so I can figure out what to do next. And then the other idea of like, yeah, I'm just going to kind of see how this all shakes out. And I'm going to be like, you're going to be unemployed very shortly.
I've had the third one of, I can't get a job because of you. I've had someone like,
oh, good Lord.
I've had some failed print cartoonist walk up to me at a convention. He's like, you're the reason why I can't make a living. I was like, I'm going to go out and say the reason you can't make a living is you're such a douchebag.
I did a webcomic marketing panel at a con, and a guy came up to me afterwards saying that was great information, he's going to use it, and it was the guy that makes Baldo, the syndicated comic. It's a,
oh my god.
And I was like, nice. Oh, you're more successful than me. And he's like, not really.
Most syndicated comics, if you get a job at syndicate, your starting pay is $22,000 a year.
Yeah.
And you don't get any boost unless you get a lot more newspapers or you start becoming merchandisable. And even then, you don't, you know, you get a sliver of that.
Yeah.
And in some cases, they can fire you and give this thing that you created to someone else to keep it going. They don't need you anymore. Why? Where is the draw to that? You know?
I really love to meet myself.
Be read by grannies.
Oh, yes.
Well, the other thing about a newspaper comic is you don't even know if anyone's even reading the comics.
Yeah,
you're buying it for the sports section. The comics are in it. You must be a reader.
Oh, I know. I love it when people say, my comic's been read by, you know, blah, 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 thousands. No, not. I mean, okay, most people would want to read the comics.
Well, is every person, every syndicated cartoons I know will tell, like, the number of people who buy the papers they're in as, that's how many people read my comic. My parents had a subscription to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram for almost 40 years. And my mother has not read a comic since she was 7 years old, and she doesn't like comics. My father can't read. He reads political comics. He found almost every syndicated comic to be boring. My 75-year-old father can't tolerate how boring Family Circus in DC are. But they count them as numbers, you know. Whereas, you know, you don't have no way of knowing how people hit your site. I have statistics. And you know what? They're not coming to my site and, oh, there's a comic here. I came here to read this link.
The ads.
Yeah.
They wanted to see a bit of work.
I only read your comics for the ads, yeah.
And you know what? Perfect. Keep clicking.
Yeah.
All right. I hope you enjoyed the webcomics panel from Dragon's Lair Webcomics Rampage. If you want to support Hijinks and Sue, please consider making a donation. Go to hijinksandsue.com/donations or click the donate button on podcast.hijinksandsue.com. Donation subscriptions are what keep the podcast up and running and free. $5 a month is the minimum subscription, so for $60 a year you can support independent content creators, and that would be so fantastic if you chose to do so. Also, if you are interested in getting the Hijinks and Sue Book 2 pre-order, this is your last week to get the Ultimate Fancy Edition. That's the big pack with all the bonuses, the limited signed and numbered print, signed and numbered books. You can get an artist edition sketch. You get some stickers and buttons and all kinds of crazy crap. And your name in the book on the Fancy Bastard Fancy Wall of Fancy Fame. This is your last week to get that package and get your name in the book, because the files go to the printer on January 15th. I'm recording this on January 9th, so there are just a few days left. So please go to hijinksandsue.com/book2, pre-order the book, or pre-order the Ultimate Fancy Edition, and really support the effort to independently publish this book with no middlemen and no companies and no BS. I'd appreciate it. Thank you so much. Godspeed, you fancy bastards. Modern life is much too hard with no jetpack.